Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to An Hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo. Today we have a subject matter that I found most intriguing, especially when I went through the material. And I just love history, as those of you who are regular listeners to the show know. And this is about a woman who lived 1,000 years ago. Her name is Hildegard of Bingen, and my guest, Matthew Fox, will perhaps correct me if I did not pronounce the community correctly, but I really was amazed at how a woman who lived 1,000 years ago was doing things that in our world today we expect women to do, but in her time, that wasn't the case. I want to welcome to the show Matthew Fox. Matthew, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you, Donna. It's good to be with you.
Now, you have had a real interest in Hildegard, and I want my listeners to know a little bit about you. You've written more than 30 books, and you are the founding president of the University of Creation Spirituality in Oakland, California. You actually were a member of a Dominican order for 34 years until you were sort of told, sorry, but we don't want you anymore. And you are an Episcopal priest now, but I find it so interesting that this woman, Hildegard, you chose to write about her, and you've really done a lot of historical research. Tell me what prompted you to become interested in a woman that lived 1,000 years ago?
Well, this is my third book on Hildegard, and I got very interested in her many years ago because she is so amazing a person. She was a very great musician. She wrote the first opera in the West. It's 300 years older than any other opera.
Oh, my
goodness.
She
lived in the 12th century, which is really more like 800 years ago. But she also was very much a scientist. She wrote over 10 books, many of them on science. And she painted her visions. She was very much a visionary. So we also have over 30 of her paintings. And I did a book on her paintings called Illuminations of Hildegard. But she was also a prophet. She wrote letters to popes, abbots, bishops, telling them they were emperors and kings, telling them they were ignoring Lady Justice, which is one of her favorite phrases, and they better get their act together. So she was, in many ways, a church reformer in the 12th century. In fact, the first follower of Luther, 400 years later, called Hildegard the first Protestant, which is very strange because she was a Benedictine abbess. But she was protesting, and as you say, she was way ahead of her time in terms of being interested in the divine feminine, for example. She's very, very strong on the divine feminine.
There's a term that you have in your book, and you've already called her a prophet, but you called her a green prophet, which I thought was an interesting terminology because we're living in a time where we've got green ecology, green this, green that. The green prophet, why did you combine those two words?
Well, for one thing, she invented a term, viriditas in Latin, which is the language she wrote in, which means greening power. And she says this is the power of fecundity and of growth. It's the power of the Holy Spirit, she says, is in every creature. And but she also was very explicit about protecting the earth. She says the earth is our mother, the mother of all things, and we must protect her. And she's fierce about talking about what happens when we destroy the web of of creation. She says we all bung to this web of life, this web of creation. And if humans ignore the rest of creation and just do what we want all the time, she says that creation itself will punish us. And she says, you know, so she's very alert about pollution and about a hostile relationship to creation, or a greedy one. She's very strong about greed.
Well, I am so intrigued with her because, again, in my mind, she's a Renaissance woman. And
very
I think
definitely,
sometimes,
very definitely.
Yes, I think in history, when we can find out about individuals that I had never even heard of her, which is not to say anything, there's a lot of things I haven't heard of. And it's always a delight to discover someone that was so far ahead of her time, and she wouldn't take guff off of anybody. I mean, this is a woman that knew herself and delighted in learning. She encouraged other women to learn. And at the time when she was in this positioning, women were treated like chattel. They were just, they were nothing. They were just considered property. In fact, sadly, that still is a mentality that exists in many parts of the world. Women and children are just property, and, you know, if you have them, great. If you don't, it's okay. You can use them and abuse them in any way you want. But she really was a woman that said, you must understand that science and spirituality can go hand in hand, and you look at what the Western world has gone through for so many centuries, and how spirituality and science were at war with each other, and in today's world, we are beginning to see a harmony with that. There's more of an understanding, not religious, not a man-made religious aspect, but the understanding of the harmony of same. And I really like the statement that you have in your book that Glenn Hughes says that a male terror of women is woven into every institution. And at her time, that was so blatant, and it, again, it still is pervasive today in some respects. But my goodness, she was a fighter.
Well, she was, and she says all science comes from God. So what you're saying is very accurate, that she respected science, and she was extremely curious, intellectually curious, and she continually was learning what science was saying about the universe and about the rest of nature. And but you're right, she was fierce when it came to standing up for principles of justice. And she really led the way in so many respects. For example, she wrote letters to the Pope and said that you're surrounded by evil men, men who cackle like hens and keep themselves awake at night cackling like hens because they're so afraid. Well, I personally find that to be a pretty accurate description of what the Curia is like these days with the Pope. And what's curious is that this present Pope just canonized Hildegard and named her a Doctor of the Church, and there have only been three other women who've been named Doctor of the Church. And so I end the book with a chapter entitled, Is Hildegard a Trojan Horse to the Vatican and to other patriarchal institutions? And she is, because she is bringing in the divine feminine. And as you say, she's not a wallflower, and she's doing it strongly. So I think it's very ironic that this papacy, which history will not record, was particularly pro-women, has canonized this woman who, I think, like a Trojan horse, is going to, what should I say, lift the roof on some of the Vatican buildings.
Now, let me ask you a personal
women.
Let me ask you a personal question. How is it that Hildegard, you say she, it's like she visits you. It's as if this is part of your job to relate her story. How did you become aware of her, and what was it about her, besides you just had this wonderful energy, that made you go deeper than the average person would with it. What was so compelling to you?
It was over 30 years ago that I first discovered her, and was actually working on Meister Eckhart, another great Christian mystic, 14th century, and he kind of led me to her. I just felt in reading him there was another voice there behind his voice, and it was a woman's voice. And somehow he led me to Hildegard. And then I met Thomas Berry, who's a great scholar. And he is the first one I'd ever met who knew about Hildegard. And he very much encouraged me, because I was writing my first book on Hildegard at the time, the Illuminations book. And Thomas Berry has been busy discovering the new cosmology and applying it to spiritual principles, his book, The Dream of the Earth, the great work, and so forth. And it was clear that Hildegard has this cosmic view of the world and of religion. Like, the cosmic Christ is important to her and the cosmic Mary, much more than a piety about a personal relationship with Jesus. She's very much more interested in how the Christ is present in every creature in the universe. And therefore, every creature is sacred and interesting and worth exploring. So I think this sense of the sacredness of the cosmos, the cosmic Christ, I think that's returning today, because religion has often become far too psychologically oriented and not offering the really big news of the awe and wonder of our existence itself.
Well, you also mentioned in your book that from the age of 5, that she had been having visions. So in our world today, we would say, oh, she's a psychic. She's got this wonderful talent of being able to see things. But of course, when you go back centuries and you find that this woman has evolved this, and I'm sure that one of the reasons she did become a nun is that that afforded her the opportunity to be who she really wanted to be, where otherwise, in society, she would have been forced maybe to marry or to do what women were expected to do, and she wanted to walk a different path. When did she... I mean, she's so fiercely independent. And like I said, to me, she's a Renaissance woman, and I just loved reading about her. I just thought she was just
so intriguing.
Well, the thing is,
she didn't so much make a decision to become a nun. Her parents did that for her. They gave her to the monastery at the age of 7. She was the 10th child, and that was sort of a custom among the aristocrats in the Middle Ages, was to give their 10th child as a tithe, you might say, to the church, as religious life. And then she apprenticed with a hermitess connected to the abbey named Jutta, and who is obviously very gifted and knowledgeable. So she got an excellent education through Jutta. And then she joined that monastery, and it was a bisexual monastery, men and women together, because that was a Celtic way of doing monasteries. And even though it was in Germany, it was a Celtic monastery. So, but then later, when she got famous, right, having finished her first book, which the Pope endorsed, many women came to study with her in the monastery, and there wasn't enough room in the women's side. So she took them all and left and started 2 monasteries, really, of her own for women. And so that, too, showed a lot of her initiative and her spunk. And not only did the nuns leave the monastery, they took their dowries with them, because back then you had to have a dowry to be in a monastery like that. And that did not sit well with the monks who wanted the dowries back, if not the women.
I bet.
So it was all part of the drama of her story. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and she does elicit drama. But what I like is her character. I mean, she is so open about everything. This is not a woman that, if she harbored secrets, she was not harboring many of them, because she just... really,
no, she was very
right out there.
That's right. And she, say, she wrote 10 books and many, many letters, all of which we have. One of the miracles of Hildegard is that her nuns kept all of her works for 800 years. And they had them in their original form, all the paintings, all the songs, all the letters, all the books. And then in 1944, when the American bombers were coming to Germany, Bingen is a town on the Rhine, and they packed all her stuff up and took it, they felt, to a safe place, that is to Dresden. But, of course, Dresden was firebombed, so all of it was destroyed. But fortunately, they were smart enough to photograph it all before they took it to Dresden. So what we have are the first generation of copies of all of her work, because it was destroyed, unfortunately, in the Second World War.
Now, she lived to be 80 years of age, which in her time frame, that was really old. I mean, in today's world, you're 80, no biggie. But then, because disease, starvation, so many things were so prevalent, it was a very harsh, harsh world. And she lived to be 80 years of age, but I found it so wonderful that this is a woman who was interested, as you said, she was so curious. She wrote books on medicine, and one was called Causes and Cures, and the other one was called Physica, which is about the elements of nature, stones, trees, fish, and more for cures to ailments. This woman, my goodness, she could be classified as a naturopath or an herbalist today.
Absolutely, and there is a clinic operating in southern Germany today by doctors, it's going over 35 years, using exclusively Hildegard's teachings on medicine and healing. And obviously it's working, or they wouldn't still be in business. But in addition to being a healer like that, at the age of 80, she was excommunicated by the archbishop, really interdicted, which means she and all of her nuns were excommunicated together because they had buried a young man on the property, a revolutionary, and the archbishop didn't want the body there, and she said, oh, no, he was a good guy, so he has to stay. So they had a standoff, and the archbishop interdicted her for over a year. They were forbidden to sing her music or the Psalms and do their public prayers at all. So this is very painful for her. And then she won the argument, that is to say, she didn't compromise. The body is still there. And she was reinstated by the archbishop, and then she died 6 months later. And she predicted, she told her nuns what day she was going to die on, 6 months in advance, and that's the day she died.
Oh, my goodness.
So she was psychic, as you say.
Yes. When you hear about a person, male or female, who is so talented and so gifted, to me they're like a messenger that is brought in, hopefully, where those around them are going to be able to see the greatness of their light and that they will protect that light. And that's what the nuns did for over 800 years with the documents until they were burned because of the Second World War, but they had the wisdom to know to photograph everything and to keep a documentation of type. And when you think about that, the only way you had records in the past was by copying things. There used to be monasteries where all of the monks, that's all they did was copy. They would just make copies by hand, and some of it was so gorgeous. It was work of art, works of art. And you look at this, and today, when you're out and about and you're talking about her, because obviously there was a connection, you've been involved with researching her and studying so many things, and this has taken an involvement of 30 years of your life, how has this had an impact on you and your talking with people and interacting with people? What was it that made you comfortable with your shift of literally being thrown out of the church in 1993 when everything was formalized on that?
Well, that's the part of Hildegard, that's the prophetic part, you know, where you disturb the peace. And you do it because all the prophets do it because they're outraged by injustice or hypocrisy or lies or just a deep feeling that we could be doing much better. And I think that that's what drove Hildegard, that she felt the church of her time. In fact, we know the main themes of her preaching, and by the way, she preached all over Germany and Switzerland, which is very interesting because this present pope, who canonized her, forbids women to preach any place, but Hildegard preached everywhere. The main theme of her preaching was the laziness of the clergy and the lack, what she called lukewarmness, the lack of energy and prophetic spirit to speak the truth and to speak the truth to power. So obviously I found an ally in Hildegard, and for years, of course, I've been interested in a balance of a healthy masculine and a healthy feminine in our understandings of God and of ourselves. Mm-hmm. And Hildegard is a champion of the divine feminine, and so that appealed to me very early in my study of her. But also, the very first time I translated her work and shared it in class, the very first time I shared it, I read one of her poems, and her language is beautiful and powerful. And a man spoke up. He said, I've just come from 16 years living on an Indian reservation, and that woman you quoted sounds exactly like the medicine man who was my spiritual director among the Native Americans, the Lakotas. And he said, now who was that lady again? Well, there you have it, the connection between a 12th century consciousness and a Native American consciousness. It's very mm-hmm. close because they both have a sense of cosmology and of our relationship to nature that is sacred, and of God as mother, the earth as mother. And so she has more in common with Native American thinking than she does with, say, the present pope. So this Amazing. Has appealed to me very much about her.
Mm-hmm. I want to share a paragraph because, again, at the age of 5, as in your research, as you found out, she was having these visions. And there is a statement that she wrote when she was 77 years old, and I'm just going to take a paragraph out of it. But it is just, it just fits in with our time, she said, and she had something she called the living light. This is what she would experience. This is what her essence was. This was the divine with the cosmos. And she said, it is in this light that I sometimes see, though not often, another light that I call the living light. When and how I see this, I cannot say. But as long as I see this living light, all sadness and anxiety are taken away from me. The result is that I feel like a simple young girl, and not like an old lady. And this was when she was 77 years old. And she was admonishing people at all times to not look to the hierarchy structure as to the word in one's own heart and mind, in the decisions one makes, and the virtues one chooses to cultivate. This is so powerful. This really is, and it stands so solidly that it's almost 1,000 years ago. It doesn't make any difference because the wisdom and truth are there. Now, with this, with Hildegard, and with what she teaches, and of course, you're passing along all this information, and she wrote music, as you mentioned. She wrote the first opera. There is a woman, Mary Oliver, that there was a very strong connection with. Who is Mary Oliver?
Well, Mary Oliver is a contemporary poet who lives in Massachusetts. She's in her 80s now. And like Hildegard, she has a deep, deep sense of the sacredness of creation. And she has found a lot of healing. She was sexually abused by her father as a child. And she has found her healing in nature. So a lot of her poetry is very profound and nature-centered. So I have a chapter here comparing Mary Oliver to Hildegard because I'm trying to bring Hildegard into the 21st century. And so my whole point in the book is my methodology is to have a chapter on Hildegard meeting Einstein because that's where the science comes together, her science mm-hmm. and Einstein and post-Einsteinian science. So this chapter on Mary Oliver is really about the cosmic Christ because I don't know anyone who's written more beautiful poetry about the cosmic Christ and has Mary Oliver in a brilliant poem at the River Clarion. Then there's a chapter where Hildegard meets Clarissa Estes because Clarissa wrote that brilliant book on women who run with the wolves, and it's a shamanistic approach to reality, and Hildegard is very, very shamanistic. this chapter on Dorothy Sola and Hildegard, because Dorothy Sola was a feminist theologian and a liberation theologian, and Hildegard has that dimension very strong in her too. And then Howard Thurman, a great African-American mystic who was key to Martin Luther King Jr. He was like his spiritual leader, if you will. Thurman, too, has a sense of life as sacred. He says we have to sing between the God of religion and the God of life at times. And Hildegard is saying the same thing, that for her, God is life and music. She says, O Trinity, you are music, you are life. And so I think this is a fun way to bring Hildegard into the 21st century, namely to put her in the room with contemporary thinkers, whether it's Mary Oliver or Clarissa Estes or Einstein and so forth. And I think it works. What do you think? You read the book.
Well, I think it's marvelous. And I loved the section of your chapter on healing medicine and that, you know, so many hundreds of years ago, she said that lifestyle affects the so-called autonomic nervous system. Negative feelings such as hate, anger, and fear, as well as positive emotions like love, compassion, hope, and joy, exert a strong influence and can cause either health or disease. And that's the body-mind-soul-spirit connection. And
absolutely.
Again, when I was going through your book and I was reading this about this wonderful woman, I thought, here we have an example of one voice that was in an environment that was extremely oppressive to women and also to men, because when women are oppressed severely, men are also oppressed, excepting for a very, very tiny amount. And things don't move forward, but she did. She did. And not only did she establish the monasteries, but she kept on with her education. She was always curious. And I really, really feel that for women to be able to read the book about Hildegard of Bingen, you say she's a saint for our times, and I look at her and I think, this is a woman that not only lived her life according to her ethics, but she was out sharing everything. And her medium of communication was being one-on-one, being in person and writing books. And so much of the population at that time was not literate. So for her to go out and to speak in those times, I mean, it took days, it took weeks to get from one point to another, depending on the time of the year that you traveled. We don't think twice about our speed of communication today. But in those days, it was very, very difficult. So this is a very hardy soul, and there is a statement that you make in your book that the mystic is one who falls in love with the world in spite of history. And I think that that is a powerful statement, because this is a woman that had such a passion for life. My goodness, you forget about when she's born and you just go through it and you read your book and you go, wow, I'd really like to know this woman. You know, this is a wonderful piece of material. And I know you're trying to reach all kinds of people with it. Matthew, you have your own website, matthewfox.org. What are people going to find on that website?
Well, they'll find information about this book and the other books I've written, and they'll find DVDs that are available and CDs that I've done, talks that I've done recently and in the past. And there's some blogs there, too. And some of my other books, a book I wrote last year called Christian Mystics, and a book called The Pope's War, about what the papacy is about. And so they'll find a lot of stuff there to kind of stir the imagination.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you what, something else that Hildegard did, she was an architect. She was so far ahead of her time that in her monasteries, she had running water and toilets. The guys didn't have it, ladies. She put it together. My goodness, what a gal. I'm telling you, this is just absolutely marvelous. Matthew, it has been so much of a pleasure having you as a guest. For those of you listening, Hildegard of Bingen is really a fabulous read, and it's because there have been powerful women that have spoken the truth and have left a legacy, and this is a woman that's done exactly that. Matthew, thank you for being my guest. Check out his website, MatthewFox.org. This is Donna Sebo.
Thank you
We're
very much,
take a break.
Donna.
We'll be right back.
And Hildegard are friends.
Thank you.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now. Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprosin.com, that's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N, and find out more information. You can order Toprosin online or call 800-959-1007, that's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprosin, non-toxic, safe for children too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. And telephone lines are now open, 888-627-6008. As I mentioned when I was chatting with Matthew, I absolutely love history. And you never know what personalities you're going to discover. And they could be such an inspiration to you. And I normally don't get into religion or politics. That's something that is not typically on my show. But when I read this book about Hildegard, I thought, wow, what a woman. And she would fit just beautifully in our today, in our world today with all of its high technology, because the wisdom that she had is very, very much sound and secure in today's world. So I just thought it was just a fascinating read. And I think that Matthew Fox has done a wonderful job with that. Okay, telephone number to call into is 888-627-6008 is the net telephone number. And if you're a first-time listener, all I need from you is your first name. And, of course, I always love to know where you're calling in from. And then just let me tell you what I perceive about you and circumstances that are going on in your life. And you're welcome to ask me about anything that you like. I wanted to share something with you that a friend sent me some information on. Have you ever heard the word factoids? F-A-C-T-O-I-D-S? Well, where did this word originate from? Apparently, this word was coined by Norman Mailer in his 1973 biography of Marilyn Monroe. Now, to him, a factoid is facts which have no existence before appearing in a magazine or a newspaper. And he put this word together because he took the word fact and then O-I-D, the ending, which means similar but not the same. So that's where a factoid came about. And the Washington Times described Mailer's new word as referring to something that looks like a fact, could be a fact, but in fact is not a fact. And it is defined by the Oxford English Dictionary as an item of unreliable information that is repeated so often that it becomes accepted as a fact. A little bit of trivia there, but that's a word that we all see and we don't pay much attention to it, so I thought I would share that with you. We have a caller on the line, first name or initial, Welcome to the show, and where are you calling in from?
I'm actually calling from Sarasota, Florida. My name is Elle.
Well, Elle, it's a delightful experience to have you on the air. And Sarasota, I know the sun's shining, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, maybe you can huff a puff a little bit.
I'm getting ready to go for a walk.
Oh, absolutely marvelous. Of course, Florida was always a place that the people on the East Coast and otherwise, but generally on the East Coast, always wanted to go to, went to escape their harsh winters. And, boy, it's true today, just as it was then. Okay, Elle, down to business with you. The first thing that I'm watching here is take care of your paperwork. I'm looking at a stack that you have been putting things into, but you've been so busy you haven't gotten to it. I want to say go through that stack, get things in order, because you've got a very, very busy schedule coming up in the year 2013. Month of December is going to be pretty full, but I think you're going to be able to manage your time so that you're not over-scheduled with things. But as I'm looking at 2013, I'm seeing you gearing yourself up for a very active, intense year. And this is excellent. I watch you with interest because I think that you have worked very diligently towards a plan of action. Now, you need to know your plan of action should be broken up into what I call four segments so that you're able to manage it without feeling overwhelmed. Also, you are developing a brand new perspective as to where you want to be financially in 4 to 5 years. This is a very good time to really look at a consistent plan of action for you to put into place. That's going to be very, very important for you. So do your homework. This is a time for research and evaluation. The year 2013, especially the first 4 months, I would say that is the application. Research and evaluation. Take the time. Work with your plan. Do whatever homework. If you're going to do some financial investing, then you want to check everything out thoroughly. Then it seems like after the month of April, after April 17th, St. Paddy's Day, it seems like that is when you really put things into action. So take the time, organize and plan. After April the 17th, put that action out. And you're going to find that by 2014, you're going to have a very strong, solid base economically, professionally, personally. It's really going to make a difference to you. So you're taking the time now, and that is vitally important, and your health is going to be very stable. What would you like to ask me?
I think you just covered absolutely everything for me. That's wonderful. Wow.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. Be sure you tell your friends about the show. How did you learn about the show?
I have to tell you, this is the first time that I've listened.
It's the first time. How did you learn about it?
Oh, my. Well, I literally happened on the radio, and here you are. And I hate to say this, but I have been waiting for the phone call, and it's here. And it's, of course, while I'm talking to you, and it has to do with the future. Oops, they hung up, but I'll call them right back.
So that's all right.
Interesting that you would say that, and then the call comes in. Very
oh, that's fabulous. That's fabulous.
That's
well, my
wonderful.
Dear, thank you so much. Tell your friends about the show. And
can I tell you who that was that was calling me?
Sure, if you want to.
Dolores Cannon.
Oh, my goodness. She is a delightful lady. She's been a guest on my show in the years past.
I love her. Well, I do a radio show also, and I had asked her if she would come back on my show, too. And so here we go. So thank you so much.
You are more than welcome.
You clarified everything for me. And I will be listening for you again. I love your show. I love what you're doing. I have to be honest, there's many people out there who talk, and that's what they do. And I really enjoyed everything you offered today. Thank you.
You're very welcome, and thank you for the gift of sharing what you've shared. That's wonderful. You have a wonderful holiday season.
I will. You're spot on. Thank you so much.
You are welcome. Donna Siebel here. If you'd like to call in and chat with me today, I would be delighted to do that with you. 888-627-6008. Now, tomorrow, we are going to be talking with a woman who is going to be calling us from South Africa. Her name is Neon Nell, and she is a phenomenal musician. We'll be playing some of her music. Her book is titled Knowing Who I Am, and she is just, her voice is lovely, the music is lovely, and her story is a very special one. On Friday, which is Pearl Harbor Day, December the 7th, we're going to be talking with Dr. Katie Evans. We're going to be discussing a book that she's written about soldiers, and it's titled Unfortunate Heroes. But where that may sound like it's a little sad, they're not so unfortunate because they work with her. She has helped a lot of vets be able to make adjustments after being in the world of war, which most of us have not experienced, and we really don't want to experience because it's never something pleasant. But Katie Evans is a woman that has dedicated her life to helping soldiers with PTSD, and we're going to be finding out more about that. We've got so many wonderful guests coming on, and you're going to go into show information right here on BBS Radio. You'll go into show information, and you're going to find out more about what is coming up. There's a brief write-up on each of my guests, and then, of course, you're going to be able to determine what you'd like to listen to, what you don't want to listen to, but you never know what's going to be coming on. Sometimes we have people that, for whatever reasons, they get ill, something happens, and they're not able to make the program, and we may have another guest in their place. I wanted to bring up a comment, and so many times life smacks us, and not very nicely. We have disappointments. We have things that go awry, and we sit and we wonder, what's wrong with me? Why is it that life isn't working out? And I wanted to address the career environment because there has been a survey done, and 54% of people who landed new jobs last year found themselves working in new fields. Now stop and think about that for a minute. 54%. So something that we need to be aware of is that we may find that our skills and talents may suit another environment that we are not familiar with. It's amazing. And so often we get locked into thinking a certain way, and those talents can be used in multiple ways. It's really a fascinating phenomenon. There was a financial advisor that became a school teacher. Do you think he could do that? Why not? Another one, a school teacher, became a restaurant manager. There was a computer tech that became a veterinary assistant. And then there was someone in the area of veterinary work that decided they wanted to get reeducated, took a job as an engineer. A truck driver becomes a fitness trainer. And then there was someone that was involved in the health field that became a radiology technician. Lots of times, it's so intriguing when we see someone and we'll go, what is it that made you go from this to this? Because it'll seem so opposite. It's like an artist becoming a cake decorator. Well, you might say, well, they're an artist. Why wouldn't they, they could do cakes. But to actually bake the cake, to actually design things that nobody else has designed before? Well, that happened with an artist who was starving to death. She couldn't find work. And she just happened to do a cake for friends. And by golly, they were just blown away with what she'd done. Well, out of a coincidence, she ends up becoming really super duper. And she charges now $10,000 a cake. That's not bad. So what is it that is a common denominator? When I look back on my history, I started working in the telephone industry when I was 17 years old. And it was all about communication. And I found every job I did, whether it was with a police department, an insurance agency, a color processing firm, color photo processing firm I worked for at one time, before I went into the intuitive work, the psychic area, full-time as a professional, my goodness, I had all of these different positionings, odd positionings, but in every single one of them, it always entailed communication on one level or another, writing or something else. So there is a common denominator with you that you may be able to apply to an arena of skill and professionalism you never imagined. So don't shut the door on yourself. Donna Sebo here. We're going to take a break for a moment. We're going to be right back.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Hi, this is Donna. I wanted to say I've got a recipe for you. And if you want to give me a buzz, call me at 888-627-6008. This is the season of the year. I don't know about you, but I get out the cookbooks and I look at different things and I'll say, all right, I have my traditional favorite, which one of them is called a stained glass food cake, which is absolutely fabulous. And then I have a special fudge recipe that always comes out a winner. So these are things that I will fix every year. But I like to have something different, something new, because that's one of the joys of the holidays, is being in the kitchen and baking up something that's really good. Well, I have got a basic recipe here that you can use that's really fast, really efficient, and everybody will think that you have spent hours with it. It's called the Quick Lemon Sour Cream Cookies. Now, sour cream just does magic with so many different ingredients. It gives a texture, it gives a moisture. And when you use this, don't use the fat-free. Don't use the low-fat. Use the real stuff because it really does make a difference. But this recipe, I'll share a tip with you after we finish, but you're going to need one box of lemon cake mix. I told you this was an easy recipe. One box of lemon cake mix, a half a cup of sour cream, use the real stuff, and a quarter of a cup of butter. Now, the butter needs to be at room temperature, so let it sit out. You need a quarter of a cup of butter, and you're going to need one egg. Now, you put all of this in a big mixing bowl. You beat it with an electric mixer on low speed until it forms a fairly stiff dough. This is how simple it is. You're just going to scoop the dough into one-inch balls, place them on your baking sheet, and I always recommend using parchment. One, you don't have to clean the cookie sheets like you do when you don't use it. And two, it just makes it so easy to take those cookies off of a hot pan and you just take the parchment paper and off it goes. Okay, so you place it on your parchment paper 2 inches apart. Bake 10 to 12 minutes at 350 degrees until set. And you want to cool it in the pan for about 5 minutes. Remove your cookies. Well, again, if you've got that parchment paper there, you don't have to let it cool in the pan. You just zip the parchment paper onto your wire cooling racks, and that's just great. Now, you can, it's going to make you about 36 cookies. If you want to do this with a chocolate cake mix, like chocolate fudge, you can add walnuts, you can add additional chocolate chips, you can add candied cherries. You could use this basic recipe with any cake mix, any cake mix. If you wanted to use a vanilla cake mix, you could add peppermint candy, you could add toffee. There are so many things that you can do, and you can involve the kids saying, okay, we're going to have maybe vanilla cookies. What flavors would you like? Don't be afraid to experiment, because this is such an easy recipe. The one I gave you is for lemon, and I want to give you a lemon cream filling recipe, but you could use it also on the top of cookies if you wanted to give it that extra zing. So let me share this with you. The filling or the frosting could be, you take 4 cups of powdered sugar, 1/4 cup of butter, 6 tablespoons of heavy cream, and 2 to 3 teaspoons of grated lemon peel. And you want to use the fresh lemon. Don't use the dried. You want to use the lemon zest from the onion skin because of that oil that's in it. And, of course, you're going to beat this. It's going to get real thick and creamy. And if it's too thick, if you feel like if you're going to use the frosting on top of your lemon cookies, then having it a little thicker is better. But if you want it for filling and it is too thick, not easy to work with, then just add a little bit of additional cream, not milk, but cream. And again, you want to use the real stuff because the flavors just marry beautifully. And then, of course, if you're going to put it in a cookie tin, if you're going to wrap it, then you might want to put a little piece of wax paper between them. Or you can take 2 cookies, use the filling, and make a nice little stack and put them maybe in a cellophane bag or wrap them pretty so that they are just going to make a lovely gift. But it is so easy, 36 cookies. It takes you minutes to do this, and you can use any cake mix that you like. Donna Sebo here. I know that we're just about out of time. And if you have an opportunity and you want to give me a buzz, well, I think you're going to have to make it another day because we are just absolutely almost out of time. And anyway, don't forget to write the number down because you can always call me during the second half of the show. Now, something that I want to mention to you is that we really have to pay attention, to our homes and making sure that we are going to be nice and cozy and comfortable. And if you have an insert or I would say a fireplace of any kind that you're going to use, you need to be sure that you have it inspected periodically because this is something, I don't know about you, but we have an insert. We've had it for years and years and years. And when you go to burn in it, because our weather is starting to get colder here in the Pacific Northwest, when you go to burn, often there has to be that preparation. And if you can have an inspection, it'll keep fires, creosote fires, from happening in your chimney. And that's one thing you do not want to have happen. So do take the time. If you enjoy a fireplace, if you have an insert, periodically have it checked so that everything is in good working order. Sometimes parts and inserts wear out. They deteriorate, as all things can. So it behooves us to take the time to check things out and also check with the rules and regulations in your state. I know we have some here in the state of Washington, and many times if you're not aware of those rules and regulations, you will be made aware of them when the inspection is done in your local area. Well, remember always, you are the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Think of Hildegard when you go about your day and realize that wisdom written by someone hundreds of years ago that's so valid today is worth being aware of. There is no limitation on learning. There is no limitation on your being the best person you possibly can be. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless. Have a magnificent day or evening wherever you are on this wonderful planet of ours. And we'll be back here tomorrow, same time, same place. Donna Sebo here. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.